I'm Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. On today's program, we'll be having a conversation with the American singer-songwriter David Bromberg.
Don't you cry no more, because I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door. Hey, honey, don't you cry no more, because I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door. Got more time than I can use, just for sitting on your back porch singing these old lonesome blues. Oh, come let me in. I got a pocket full of funnies just to show you where I've been. Don't you cry no more, because I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door. Shade. Put the coffee on the burner, honey, here's your bed fresh made. No, 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 don't tell me no stories now. Oh, just to tell me, did you miss me, honey, then just show me how. Hey, don't you cry no more. I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door. Bed fresh man, no, 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 don't tell me no stories now. Just tell me, did you miss me, honey, then just show me how. Thank you. Donna, don't you cry no more. I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door. Hey, honey, don't you cry no more. Because I think I see your good man headed straight for your back door.
That was called The Main Street Moan, and that's from David Bromberg's 1974 album called Wanted Dead or Alive. And on that track, his good friend Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead is playing acoustic guitar. David is playing acoustic guitar and singing lead vocals, Steve Berg on bass, and Andy Stapman on mandolin. So David Bromberg had a really exciting career all through the 60s. He began his solo career in 1971 with his first self-titled album. But, you know, you've heard him play. You might not have even been aware of it, but he has recorded guitar, dobro, mandolin, and fiddle for albums by so many musicians. He's recorded with Bob Dylan, Carly Simon, The Eagles, Ringo Starr, Willie Nelson, Gordon Lightfoot, Bonnie Raitt, David Bromberg. I sat down with David Bromberg recently as he was preparing for his performance at Bethel Woods. It's my pleasure to be here today, and I'm speaking with David Bromberg. David is about to do a performance here at the Bethel Woods Center for the Performing Arts, and he's taken a few minutes of his time to sit down with me and have a conversation. Welcome, Mr. Bromberg.
Thank you.
It's good to talk to you.
Well, it's good. Good to be talked to.
So, you know, I understand that you just released a brand new album in July 2011 called Use Me. And the title song is that song by Bill Withers.
That was an afterthought. It was the last track I recorded. And it's called Use Me because what I did was I called up a bunch of people, pretty famous people, who I had some kind of relationship with, and asked each of them to write a song for me and then to produce me doing it. In other words,
to not only write the song, but to produce you as well.
And perform on it.
Ah.
So, but, you know, if you're going to write the song for me and produce it, use me.
Use me.
Yeah.
So that title track, let's talk about that a minute. Your producers on that track were Phil and Joe Niccolo.
Yeah.
And you kind of have an R&B groove on that track.
Well, Phil and Joe are known for the R&B tracks that they produced out of Philly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And actually, this is the first track that they worked on together for decades.
Wow.
They've been working separately for a long, long time. And they decided to join forces again to do that track. And it was fun to do. They feel it's their appointed duty. Oh, they keep trying to tell me that all you wanna do is use me. Yeah, but my answer to all that use me stuff. I want to spread the news that if it feels this good getting used, you just keep on using me until you use me up. Until you use me up. You know my brother sat me right down and it talked to me. You know that he told me
that I ought not to let you just walk on me. And I'm sure that he meant well. Yeah, but when our talk was through, I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me, girl, until you use me up. Keep on using me until you use me up. Until you use me up. Yeah, until you use me up. Talk about you using me. But it all depends on what you do. It ain't too bad the way you're using me. Cause I sure am using you to do the things you do. Yeah, using you to do the things you do. Yeah, I kinda got to like the way you use me, baby. That's what I'm here for, darling. You just go ahead, use me. Yeah, right now. You can use me, baby. Use me, 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 use me. Uh-huh. No, 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 don't use that. That's better, yeah. Yeah, I like the way you use me. I still got more, you know. You ain't used me up yet. Till you use me up.
David Bromberg with the title track from his newest CD released in July 2011, Use Me. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, Radio Catskill. I was lucky enough to have a conversation with David Bromberg when he recently appeared in a performance at the Bethel Wood Center for the Performing Arts.
So you wrote a song. You have only written one song on this particular album, although I know you've been a songwriter for many years. That song is called Tongue.
Yeah.
And your friend Levon Helm is playing drums on that track. What was that recording like, and why did you choose that song for this project?
At the time, Levon was recovering from a throat surgery, and he couldn't talk. So there was no way he could write a song for me. Or produce the session, for that matter. Larry Campbell produced the session.
He couldn't speak?
No.
But he could play?
Oh, yeah. So Larry lined up the musicians, and we couldn't think of, well, first we had to decide what tune to do, and we decided, well, if we couldn't do Levon's, we'd do one of mine. And so we chose Tongue, and Larry wrote great horn arrangements. We got a five-piece horn section.
Wow.
And B3 organ, and me and Larry playing guitars, Levon playing drums, and we recorded it. And I liked Tongue so much I wanted to save it for the next CD. I was going to do a CD called Old School, you know, all Chicago-style blues.
Oh, excellent.
I'm still going to do one called Old School, and it will have a lot of Chicago-style blues, but it'll probably have other stuff on it, too. Baby, I ain't mad. I know it's all over, darling, but honey, daddy ain't mad. I tell you the truth, little girl, you're not the best thing this child ever had. It won't take long, a mama, till you feel your fear. I know you, girl. It won't take long, baby, till you feel your fear. Well, let me tell you, but you're gonna be walking those streets for a long, old, lonesome time before you find a man like me to curl your toes and roll your eyes back in your hair. He ain't half the man that I am, because little girl, you should have known that right from the start. Hey, don't talk about it, because I don't want to hear you lie. And turn on the waterworks, baby, because I refuse to stand here and watch you cry. And one more thing, you best get your tongue out of my mouth, because I'm kissing you goodbye.
That was David Bromberg. That was his original song from his recent CD. The song is called Tongue. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF award-winning hydro-powered radio. Let's hear some more from the conversation that I recently had with David Bromberg. So you have been a musician your whole life. I understand that you lived in Tarrytown, you grew up in Tarrytown, and you're like 13 years old when you get your first guitar.
Well, I played other instruments before that.
And before you were 13?
Yeah, and I didn't get my own guitar till I was a little bit older than that. I'm not sure, 14 or 15. I played on my brother's guitar. I wanted to play guitar real bad, but my older brother played it. So I didn't do it until I got the measles. And I could read music, so I borrowed his books and one of his guitars and learned to play lying flat on my back.
Uh-huh. You enrolled at Columbia University. I'm thinking that would be 1963, 64. You get out of high school and you go to Columbia. This is a major Ivy League institution, and you want to take a degree as a musicologist.
That's right.
I find that so fascinating.
Well,
see, what was your special interest? What particular musicology?
I really wanted to be a musician. That's what I wanted to do. But although nobody ever said it so specifically, it was assumed that I would go into some kind of white-collar profession.
All right.
I just knew that was what the future held for me. And so the closest thing to playing music I could think of was to study musicology.
Were you studying American music? Were you studying...
I didn't even get into the major. I was only there for a year and a half.
You were going down to Greenwich Village while you were at Columbia and playing in the coffee houses.
I was also playing in the quad at midnight at Columbia and out on the island in the middle of Broadway at 116th Street.
Just playing on the street with your case open.
No case open. It wasn't to make money. It was just a place to play at night.
Wow.
Where the kids in the dorm wouldn't yell, shut up.
Oh, God. You live it in the dorm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's well known how your career developed in the 60s, all the musicians that you played with, you know. But I find it kind of ironic that for you to begin your solo career, it didn't start for you in Greenwich Village, that you were actually performing in England with Miss Sorrell at the Isle of Wight. And apparently you did some kind of an unexpected solo performance, and Columbia Records assigned you to a recording contract.
What happened?
What was that like?
So what happened there at the Isle of Wight, we were there on a Thursday night, maybe Wednesday night, and there were already 200,000 people there, of which maybe 1,000 had paid.
Ooh, it sounds like Woodstock in some regards.
No, Woodstock, more people paid. They knocked down the fences.
Right.
It was a free concert. And the promoters were smart enough not to cancel it, or there would have been riots. But an audience that hasn't paid is the most difficult audience to please. It's always like that. And they were booing a lot of people off the stage, including some very good people.
Oh.
We followed... Rosalie and I, I was just accompanying Rosalie Sorrells, and we followed Chris Christopherson, who was given a rough time. And when we came off stage, the promoters asked me to come back at dusk, about 6 o'clock. And I was so green at the time, I didn't realize that that's the very best time to play at an outdoor concert, because all of a sudden... the ambient light is gone, and the only light is on the stage, so everybody has to focus on the stage. And you're not so tired of listening to music. You know, it's just the ideal time.
Oh, it's a magic hour.
Yeah.
The light changes. People calm down.
Yeah. So I came back, and I asked them how many songs I should sing, and they said, do an hour.
Wow.
I'd never done an hour in my life.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. And I went up, and I did an hour, and I got... at least three encores, and every time I'd come off, there were people with these old motion picture cameras with a bank of lights on them, you know, and I'd go back on. And now, however, there was no press there. This was still Wednesday night. The press didn't arrive till Friday, or my life would have been very different, because I was the star that night. It was completely unexpected. And it was just between me and those 200,000 people. So, and another curious thing about that is it wasn't until last year that, I've done shows in front of six people, and every show I've done, even in front of six people, I meet people who have been there and they say, oh, do you remember that night and so-and-so? But it wasn't until last year that somebody came up and said, I was at the Isle of Wight when you did that.
Oh, my.
So, because I wondered about that. There was 200,000 people.
That's an exciting story. Yeah. That's an exciting
and,
story.
And Columbia was recording the whole thing. And a man named Tio Macero, who was very involved with recording and music for a long time and a knowledgeable guy, he recommended that they sign me. Of course, that's not necessarily an indication of his being knowledgeable, but he was knowledgeable. Anyhow, and one of the odd things about that recording, they put out a 3-LP set of the Atlanta Fest and the Isle of Wight Fest. Columbia had specified in their contract with the promoters that there be an electrical current regulator there so that the machines would operate. It wasn't there. So the machines were recording slow. And when they mastered it up to speed. So I sound a little bit like one of the chipmunks. not quite there. But on the one track that's there, and that was my first singing on a record, yeah.
The Isle of Wight is 1970. And your first solo album was in 1971 on Columbia.
Yeah.
David Bromberg's first solo album, his debut album in 1971, features a song that he co-wrote with George Harrison. Let's listen to that song, and then David will tell us about what it was like to meet George, how they wrote the song together, and what that experience was like for him.
Your hands, you must stand and deliver. My stomach's empty, my clothes are all torn. Open your hearts to the joys of the giver. Only your pockets are terribly worn. This is a hold up, no way to mistake it. We're men of violence, so don't fool around. If you have money, we're going to take it. Try and stop us, you'll end underground. Your money, we'll ride towards the sunset, at Rose's canteen we'll stop at the door, we'll spend all your money, just getting the nose wet, tomorrow evening we'll be back for more, so hand us the money, don't stand there and shiver. Tax time is coming, give alms to the poor, or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease and I am the cure. The sunset at Rosa's canteen, we'll stop at the door. We'll spend all your money just getting the nose wet. Tomorrow evening, we'll be back for more. So here's the money, don't stand there and shiver. Tax time is coming, give alms to the poor, or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease and I am the cure.
Thank you.
But you co-wrote a song with George Harrison,
right.
And he plays slide guitar
yes.
on your debut album.
Yeah. Now, uncredited, though. I didn't list his name. Dylan played harmonica on that album, too, and I didn't list his name. I wanted their music. I didn't necessarily want to climb on their shoulders.
So George Harrison, how did you meet him? It wasn't in England at that time, then.
The first time I met him, if my memory serves, I know that my manager at the time introduced me on a few occasions, but I have a memory of running into him in Columbia Studios. Maybe that was after. And he sang me one of my songs.
Oh, wow.
And he told, I said, where the hell did you learn that? And he learned it from Dylan. So that was a great.
Well, now, when I think of the lyrics to this song, it's called The Hold Up. Is that right? It's very much about, you know, where's the money and where's it going? And it makes me think about the song that George Harrison wrote called Tax Man.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like Tax Man.
Well, he came up with a lot of the best lines.
Well,
you know, the whole reference to we'll spend all your money just getting the nose wet. That's kind of an English way of saying drinking, getting the nose wet. And I'll put a bullet right through your best liver.
Oh, is that another one of his?
Yeah, that was one of his lines. So we had a great time. We didn't plan to write a song. We were at the apartment of a man named Al Aronowitz, who at the time was my manager, and he was an excellent writer. And he knew Dylan, he knew the Beatles, and he invited George and I to his home for Thanksgiving dinner. And there was a guitar there that belonged to his daughter, who has become a very fine writer herself, and Brent Aronowitz. And she wrote a funny article about that night, talking about how much grief all her friends gave her for not inviting them over to
dinner with George. Harrison. Oh, my.
But anyhow, she had a gut string guitar, and George and I passed it back and forth. We're both guitar junkies.
Yeah.
And without meaning to, we wrote a song.
That's a beautiful story.
True.
Such a charmed career.
Yeah. I was very lucky to be in a lot of the right places at the right time. And when George was still alive, I didn't tell the story. I would tell lies. We were in the Holland Tunnel, stuck in traffic, and, you know, all kinds of nonsense. But that's what happened. And Brett wrote about it in an article, which I was very happy to read.
I hope you're enjoying the conversation with David Bromberg. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. So yes, David Bromberg co-wrote a song with George Harrison on his debut album in 1971. And then in 1974, on his third album, he recorded the song The Hold Up again. And on this album, he was accompanied by Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead.
BMI, The Hold Up here on
that was the second recording of it.
So this is not the one with Harrison?
No.
Oh, it's only on your first one, and this is the second recording.
The first one actually had a really incredible, wild feeling to it.
Wow.
And my manager at the time wanted to play on AM radio, so we got... we put some French horns on it, and to me, they ruined it. And
that was after the fact? They were mixed in later, the French horns?
Yeah. Well, George was mixed in later, too. I mean, it was recorded live at the World Control Studios, and then George came in and put on his part.
And he played slide?
And he played slide.
Uh-huh. And, you know, we were talking a little bit when you first sat down about how when you attended the Woodstock Festival...
Uh-huh.
That you were sitting in a teepee with Jerry Garcia.
Right.
And then, like, later, here's Jerry Garcia playing with you on this record, and
right.
Phil Lesh and Bill Kreutzmann.
Yeah.
And, you know, this album is called Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah,
does it have anything to do with
course.
The Grateful Dead?
Yeah, of course.
Wanted Dead.
Yeah.
your hands, you must stand and be loud. My stomach's empty, my clothes are all torn. Open your hearts to the joys of the giver. Only your pockets are terribly worn. This is a hold up, no way to mistake it. We're men of violence, so don't fool around. If you have money, we're going to take it. Try and stop us, you'll end underground. When we get your money, we'll ride towards the sunset. At Rose's canteen, we'll stop at the door. We'll spend all your money just getting the nose wet. Tomorrow evening, we'll be back for more. So give us the money, don't stand there and shiver. Tax time is coming, give alms to the poor. Or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease and I am the cure. Sunset. At Rosa's canteen, we'll stop at the door. We'll spend all your money just getting the nose wet. Tomorrow evening, we'll be back for more. So here's the money, don't stand there and shiver. Tax time is coming, give alms to the poor. Or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease and I am the cure.
That was David Bromberg from his 1974 album, Wanted Dead or Alive. That's David Bromberg singing a lead vocal, playing electric guitar and acoustic guitar on a song that he co-wrote with George Harrison. However, on this version, the Grateful Dead are with him: Jerry Garcia on electric guitar, Phil Lesh on bass, Bill Kreutzmann on drums, Hungra Garcia on timbales. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. Let's hear some more of the conversation that I recently had with David Bromberg. After your first album, you had an amazing career all through the 70s. What started as a solo acoustic album grows into the David Bromberg Big Band. We've got horn players, and we've got fiddle players, and for an entire decade, you're touring and recording, and it's all very big. And then in 1980, you and your wife leave California, move to Chicago, and you begin studying the art of violin making. Now, I know that they call guitar makers luthiers.
Violin makers as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same term. What fascinated me about violins was how someone could pick up a violin, not look at the label, and tell you where and when it was made and possibly by whom. And that's what I wanted to learn. So in order to learn that, the first thing I did was to study making them. So that I would have an idea of how to tell the difference between one that's made in one fashion and one that's made in another.
It's fascinating, this passion that you have for music and how you've expressed it in so many ways and the changes and decisions that you've made in your life.
Well, I got burnt out is why I broke up the band. I was completely burnt out. I was on the road at one point for 2 years without being home for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And rather than thinking I was burnt out, which would have been the intelligent thing, I thought I was no longer a musician because I found myself at home not writing, not practicing, and not jamming, not touching a guitar. And so I thought it was over. Whatever musician I had been, I no longer was. And I didn't want to be one of these guys who drags himself onto the stage and does a bitter imitation of what he used to love. So I decided I had to find another way to live my life. And violins had fascinated me, and I'd started collecting them already. And so I decided to try and learn to identify violins. And that was my study.
Well, that was 1980. You started to attend the violin school, and here today you have a very hip and happening violin shop, the David Bromberg Five Violins,
yes,
in Wilmington, Delaware.
Right.
I believe you opened in 2002.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious, do your violins, do you have the clients that you have, do you have classical violinists in
addition to fiddlers? Not a whole lot of fiddlers. Mostly classical violinists. I do have a poster up of Kenneth Threadgill singing with a fiddler playing behind him so that fiddlers will know that we speak fiddle. But most of the classical clients that I have no idea of my music career at all.
Oh, I was curious about that.
Yeah. No, I try and keep them separate. You know, if you're going to spend $50,000 or $100,000 on a violin, you might think twice before handing it over to a guy who walked on tables shouting and strumming a guitar.
Wilmington, Delaware. Apparently the city values your presence there. It's been very successful. And the story that I got is that there in Wilmington, these jam sessions started to happen.
That's how come I'm playing again.
And you started to, like, you started to come back to performing. Uh-huh. While you were in Wilmington, not only did you start playing in jams, but your wife, Nancy, started to perform in jams.
Yeah.
She's started her own band called the Angel Band now.
Right, and they're playing tonight.
And they're opening on your performance tonight here at Bethel Woods.
We don't perform together all that often. I used to be the guitar player for Angel Band, but they had to get rid of me.
Nothing personal, I hope.
No. The problem was that people were viewing Angel Band in terms of me because I was better known than they were.
Uh-huh.
And that's not what it's about.
So you started to jam, and then you recorded a solo acoustic album in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Try Me One More Time.
Right.
Grammy nomination. Congratulations.
Thank you. My name never appeared on the same page as the word Grammy before, so it was nice.
Congratulations. That had to be really satisfying.
Yeah, I went out to L.A. for the Grammys. I knew I wouldn't win.
Well, now, the same year, wasn't Electric Dirt, the Levon Helm?
Right.
That was nominated in the same year?
Yes, and I knew he would get it. It was a wonderful album, and they were giving him a Lifetime Achievement Award. Levon will never get all the recognition he deserves.
Wow.
So I was happy to see him get it. I knew he'd get it, and I was happy for him.
Let's take a minute to listen to David Bromberg's the title track from his Try Me One More Time CD. This is his solo acoustic album from 2007. David Bromberg.
This morning, just about fall, my used to be come knocking on my door. She come crying, try me one more time. She was crying, daddy, try me one more time. She said, take me back, try me one more time. She said, I'll give you money, daddy, buy you clothes. I learned something, curl your toes. She was crying, try me one more time. She was crying, try me one more time. Oh, she said, take me back, daddy, try me one more time. I'll buy you clothes, give you money too. I'll do everything a girl could do for you. She was crying, daddy, try me one more time.
crying. Try me one more time. And she said, take me back. Try me one more time. Daddy, I didn't do you right. I swear I'll rock you to sleep, baby. Every night she come crying. Try me one more time. She was crying. Try me one more time. Oh, she said, take me back, Daddy. Try me one more time. I said, look here, Mama. It's a natural fact. It's you quit me, ain't gonna take you back. She was crying. Try me one more time. She come crying. Try me one more time. Oh, she said, take me back, Daddy. Try me one more time. She said, take me back. Try me one more time.
That was David Bromberg, Try Me One More Time, his Grammy-nominated CD from 2007. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then, here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. Let's get back to our conversation with David Bromberg. You know, there was also a song I wanted to ask you about when we were talking about your 2007 solo acoustic release, because there's something about your singing. When I first heard that album from 2007, your voice has gotten full and round and deeper, and you seem so confident as a singer now, so physically confident as a singer. There's one song on that album, and it's called Lonesome Roving Wolves.
Oh yeah.
Lonesome Roving Wolves. When I heard that song, it had such an incredible effect on me. It sounds like a British ballad. It's so beautifully sung.
I learned that from Rosalie Sorrell.
Sorrell.
And it's a song of the Mormons, but it would be a song really of, well, the first line is, the Mormons were camped down beside the Green Grove. It was a song of the Mormons who crossed the country to settle in Utah, but it could have been about any settlers. I mean, that was the point. The point of this, to me, was, you know, our astronauts are very brave people, but they're scientists, and they believe in technology. And the people who settled this country and went west knew that their technology was awful and that it would all break down and that there were people who they regarded as savages who would want to kill them. And they would have to cross rivers full of snakes and you know, suffer through tornadoes and all kinds of climb mountains where nobody had any business trying to go over in order to get to where they wanted to go. They knew that they were headed into some real horrors. And they were.
The Mormons were camped down beside the Green Grove, where the clear waters flowed from the mountains above. The wind, it approached all chilly and cold, and we listened to the howling of the lonesome roving wolves. The groans of the dying were heard in our camp. The cold, chilly frost, it was seen on our tents. And the fear in our hearts can never be told, as we listen to the howling of the lonesome roving wolves. The grave of the stranger we left on the plain, down beside the Green Grove, there forever to remain, to remember his grave. We left ashes and coals to keep him from the savages and the lonesome roving wolves. Well, early next morning, just at the break of day, the fife and the drum, they did play reveille. Our mules were brought in, our baggage to pull. And now we'll bid adieu to the lonesome roving wolves.
That was David Bromberg, Lonesome Roving Wolves, from his Try Me One More Time CD. So I think it's interesting that you did the solo acoustic in 2007, and then this most recent release, Use Me, you go back to the full band format.
Well, none of them is my band. It's all people that the producers of each track had an individual producer. The mm-hmm. only one, Larry Campbell, produced the two tracks that Levon played on, but the mm-hmm. others, each one is different.
Now, there's one song called Digging in the Deep Blue Sea, mm-hmm. with Keb Moe produced it.
Producing, and he co-wrote it.
The song deals with the offshore drilling.
Yeah,
offshore drilling.
It's not exactly a protest song, though, you know. The key line is the very last line. Let's see, the last verse is, birds can't swim, fish can't swim, birds can't fly, but we keep on pumping because demand is high. This is the key phrase. What are we going to do about this mess we made?
Mm.
You can't run an 18-wheeler on lemonade.
Mm. So it addresses both sides of the question.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Yeah, what are we going to do about the mess we made? Yeah.
Honest question.
Yeah.
Well, just brilliant.
They've been drilling down in Texas since 1894. If they drilled a little deeper, they could always find some more. They got a pipeline from Alaska to Iraq and Iran. And now we gotta get it any way we can. 'Cause this whole world is just a junkie, all strung out on gasoline. Now they got these boats now.
So, David Bromberg, there is a documentary in the works, mm-hmm. I understand. A documentary produced by a woman named Beth
Cruven.
Beth Cruven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's going to be an amazing documentary. I'm so excited to hear about it.
She's a prize-winning filmmaker.
Well, I think that, you know, your life is so fascinating and your career as a musician so accomplished. I think it's going to be a very popular documentary. I'm so looking forward to it.
I'm kind of surprised that somebody wants to do a documentary, so I'm interested to see what she found that was unusual. I mean, there are lots of musicians, and there are lots of great ones, mm-hmm. and I don't put myself in that category. I mean, I think of myself not so much as an artist as a craftsman. I think it's really wonderful if somebody refers to what I do as art, but I don't. Somebody else says it's a very high compliment. But I try and craft the best job that I can every time I do a job. And that's like a jeweler or a shoemaker. You try and do your best and do your craft.
Thank you so much for the time you've taken to talk with me today.
Thank you for your interest.
You've had some really interesting and fascinating things to say.
Well, thank you.
This is Kathy Geary, and you've been listening to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. I hope you've enjoyed today's program. If you'd like to get in touch, please email me nowandthen@wjffradio.org. Thank you so much for listening.